Welcome to Real Roulette with Zach and Biggs. I'm Biggs.
And I'm Zach.
So today we're covering a movie that's relatively new. I didn't quite catch the year.
2013, apparently?
Yeah, so really new. Odd Thomas.
There we go.
It's a, I guess it's a Dean Koontz book originally.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, based off a Dean Koontz series of novels, apparently. Now,
it had that feel. I was going to say it had the feel like it was somewhere in the middle or, you know, they definitely they wanted to turn this into a franchise.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't think it's going to happen, but
there's still a chance.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem likely.
But anyway, let's begin as we always begin with the trailer.
Hit them.
Ladies. My name is Odd Thomas. Lord knows. I'm not a celebrity. I'm not the child of a celebrity. I've never been married to, abused by, or provided a kidney to a celebrity. But I do lead an unusual life. Knock, knock.
Loop me in, Odd One.
This place looks like some kind of shrine.
Did you check the refrigerator for any severed heads?
That is Stormy Llewellyn. Stormy and I are destined to be together forever.
That must be for you.
I found a gateway to hell.
Get out of there, Audie.
Been communing with the dead?
It's not about who's dead, sir. It's about who soon might be.
You have a secret. You're either a clairvoyant, a psychic, or you got yourself some juice with a higher power.
I'm here looking for a guy, a creepy guy.
Any of those Bodach things around?
Bodachs.
When they do show up, it's a sure sign that carnage and bloodshed are not far behind. If they find out you can see them, they will kill you.
I'm just so scared for you, Adi. A lot of people died in that dream of yours, huh, Adi?
Yeah, they did.
Your dreams ever come true?
This town is in serious trouble.
APB put out on this guy now!
August 15th. Trust me, that is the day that Pico Mundo will never forget.
Okay, so this, I'm still not sure what to think. I literally just finished this before Zach came over. It has a very lighthearted tone through most of the movie until about the last 20 minutes. And then the tone abruptly changes.
Yes, very much so.
Which is unusual, to say the least.
Yes. And it's done in a way that's not at all earned. Like it just becomes a very different movie for a minute.
Which we'll get into the details of that in a minute, but I did kind of like the tone at the start.
Yeah, the way I phrased it in my notes is it's not a very good movie in that, like, it's not structured all that well. The acting is not all that great. The dialogue isn't all that good, but I found it very likable and charming. So yeah. I was sort of willing to ride with it.
Yeah, and then you hit the end, which is not lighthearted at all.
It gave me emotional whiplash.
That was exactly what I was thinking. Like, that was the exact phrase that hit my brain. I don't know why emotional whiplash hits both of our brains, but it does.
Because sometimes only one phrase can aptly describe what you saw.
But we'll talk about the movie, and then you can kind of see where we're going.
Yeah, you'll get what we mean.
Okay, so we start out. It basically starts, they just break down everything for him. So it makes sense that this isn't possibly in the middle of a series of books. Because it's basically from scene one, you just find out this guy's a psychic.
Yep.
Essentially. Well, he's not a psychic, but he's
clairvoyant to some degree. And This opening scene where they sort of introduce who he is and where he lives and who the main characters are, it almost read to me like a last time on Odd Thomas. Like, this yeah. should have been a show on ABC in 2003. Like, that's the right medium for this movie.
Yeah, like on CW.
Yeah, there you go. It would have been a really good CW show. It would have been a really good CW show and a not so good movie.
Yeah. Anyway, so we start out, we find out his name is actually Odd.
Yeah.
Like, his name is Odd Thomas.
Which, but whatever.
We find out his mom was crazy.
Yeah, this is just what I have. Abilities. Crazy mom. Like, there's just something. It's not really established what specifically makes her off. But something is not quite...
Well, he did allude to the fact that she had the same powers, but yeah. he didn't talk about his powers because he didn't want to...
bring something...
Well, he didn't want to be locked up like his mom was. But everybody knows about his powers. So... Like, everybody in town. So, what?
Yeah, so...
I mean, that doesn't make sense to me. But one thing I did like was that everybody knew his powers because it gets pretty lame when you have that movie where like only one person can see everything and everybody else thinks they're crazy all the time. And the jokes that come from it are horrible.
Yeah, because there's only so much ground to travel with that concept.
So I did like that nobody knew it, but... Dude, all you had to do was cut that one line.
Mm-hmm.
That was all he had to do.
You know what I found? This movie has a lot in common structurally and sort of tonally with a lot of superhero movies, right? Like, we establish he has powers. He's beloved in his town. He's got all these allies. Like, he may as well be a superhero.
But they basically... So he talks a little bit about his powers and then he sees this little girl... who's walking and doesn't say anything, and he starts following her, and it goes up to this convertible that this mm-hmm. guy's in, and then he talks about how his powers make him hunt people.
Yes.
And he says to the guy, he goes, "You have blood in your pocket," and the guy looks at him like, I don't know, like scared maybe?
Yeah. Like, he's like, how does this guy know? Is essentially what we're supposed to get from it.
Yeah, and he says, so you put her blood in your pocket last night, this little girl, and then it mm-hmm. hardened so that you could feel it. And he's like, but this is an odd thing to say to somebody.
Just out of the blue.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing.
Well, no, he says this is an odd thing to say to somebody, but off of your reaction, I can tell it's true.
Yeah.
And then the dude just leaps out of the convertible. I think he take the keys out of the convertible.
Which, this is what I have in my notes.
And then says it to him, right? Mm-hmm.
Douche guy loves that car, but it can't love him back. Like, that dude loved his car, which honestly, I think that pissed him off more than Odd Thomas accusing him.
And then this line, I'm betting Dean Koontz wrote this around 2000
mm-hmm.
because this line would have really hit better if it hadn't been, 15, 16, 17, 18 years after The Sixth Sense?
Yeah.
Because he says the line... I may see dead people, but then by God, I do something about it.
Yeah.
Like, that would have hit way better. It would have right killed after The Sixth Sense.
In like 2001.
Yeah. But
would have really worked.
That's not a line that like people are going to like howl over nowadays. Mm-mm.
Like, the most you're going to get is a, like that's tops.
Yeah,
that's
what you're getting. Didn't get that from me.
No, it got stone faced from me. Just, all right, moving on.
And then, we established, he chases the guy, basically.
Yep.
They go through a pool party and, like,
yeah,
knock over a barbecue and all the stuff you'd expect.
Yeah.
Thrown into a bar and all this stuff. And he finally gets the guy, and you see the little girl, and he talks to her about how she's going to go to a better place and on and on and mm-hmm. on, and then she disappears. And he says something about how the dead don't talk.
Yeah.
He doesn't know why, but they don't talk.
Yeah. And he also, we learn he can fight. Odd Thomas can throw a punch.
Yeah. So then we're introduced into William Dafoe, who's a detective who knows Odd.
Okay. Can we talk about something that really bothered me about this?
The usage of William Dafoe?
Yes.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. It's not even a good, it's not a bad William Dafoe performance. It's just not a great one either. And
he had one... one good moment. And it wasn't even a good scene. It was a good moment. And that's when he rolls a tear right on cue.
Yes.
And I was like, now that's acting, dude. I know he put glitter in his eye, but to be able to roll
but to
right
do it
at that
yeah,
moment,
perfect.
That was good acting. But
now, what really, like, Willem Dafoe is at his best when he's Dark Creepy. Whispers.
Yeah.
He's not this at all. And this is what bothers me about all the supporting good guy characters in the film. Their character trait is that they love and support Odd. Like, that's the yeah. one thing any of them is there for.
They basically, you could put Odd Thomas as Adam Sandler and the movie wouldn't play that much differently.
Yeah.
In terms of how everybody reacts.
Everyone is there just to tell him how great he is. Like, that's everybody's role in the movie. It got really annoying really fast.
It really did. So then he's walking down and he sees, so Odd Thomas sees all these dead people everywhere, I guess, because it's all these faceless people and they're
wearing bowling shirts.
Oh, that's right. They are wearing bowling shirts and they have no faces and they yell, somehow they yell because they don't have faces.
Yeah.
They yell, save us. Mm-hmm. And then he says, from what? And then you see them all like get bullets in their chest and then Odd Thomas has a bullet in his chest, and then he wakes up in bed.
Yes.
And there's no bullet.
And it's
in his
all
chest.
Okay.
Yeah.
For now.
Yeah. So then we see him. He's a short order cook, and he's doing the thing that you might have heard in the trailer where he's like flipping sausages.
Yeah.
And
this. Okay. You've talked a lot about disliking bad CGI.
Yes.
You know what I really dislike? Misuse of CGI. There is a CGI milkshake in this scene. A CGI milkshake. Now, I don't know where they filmed this, that they didn't have access to the ingredients to create a milkshake, but there is a CGI milkshake in this movie. And here's the thing. It's not necessarily awful CGI, just referring to the milkshake, of course, because there's some bad CGI, but... Yeah. It's just that it's so clearly CGI and it just, and the reason they do it is so they can have the scene where he like shoots it into the glass, but it's not even worth it. Like, come on, just come on.
Zach, you have stepped into a realm in which I'm so proud of you right now because well, that is exactly what I hate about CGI the most is when they can do something practical and they don't because they're like, we'll just CGI it.
Because,
like,
I mean, a milkshake, that's what we found in my line. A goddamn CGI milkshake is, that's beyond the pale to me. Like,
you
that seems made up.
You could, like, pour out a milkshake and reverse the film.
Exactly.
Or like,
and
film the camera upside down, pour it out, and then, like, reverse the camera.
How about this? We don't have the stupid-ass shot where he shoots milkshake into a glass. How about that? How about he just gives her a milkshake?
You know what? We don't even need to see him be good as a short-order cook.
No, because it doesn't matter.
It serves nothing.
It does not matter.
That's the thing. It serves nothing. We only even see him as a cook, like, what, once? Like,
yeah,
in that
pretty
intro.
Much. Yeah.
It's
they just
thought it was so important that their Netflix entry, they put him as a short-order
cook. You know what I would bet happened? I bet it's something that isn't really important. So in the Harry Potter books, he's always at the Dursleys to start the book, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
I've never read them.
And the Dursleys themselves, like, aren't really that important in terms of, like, moving the plot forward.
Having watched the movie, I'd say they're important in that they take the viewer, like, okay, you're in the real world. Now with Harry, you get transported into this magical world, right?
That's a big part of it. And the other part of it is they're there to essentially give a sense of continuity. Like, he's at the Dursleys to start.
Right.
So you get the take him into a magical world aspect and you get the, like, it's there to be a continuity backbone, right? Like, it's there to give you some sort of structure.
But the first part I said doesn't make sense for this because they start out with the mystical stuff and then they try and ground it and he's a short order cook that
but I would
amazing things.
I would bet, and this is you're gonna find this a shock, but I have not read the Dean Koontz novels.
I've never read a Dean Koontz
novel. Me either.
I foolishly, like, hated Dean Koontz when I was a kid because I looked at him as a threat to Stephen King. Because I was a giant Stephen King fan when I was a kid. And I always knew, like, those couple of dudes who would be the hipster version of, like, a 10-year-old in the 80s who were like, Dean Koontz is better. And I'd be like, fuck Dean Koontz. Because I'd be on the exact opposite end. Like, Dean Koontz was the hip one to follow, but Stephen King had the best.
See, I was...
I guess. I don't know.
I never read Dean Koontz because I'm going to stay in my lane. Like, Dean Koontz is not in my lane when it comes to books. Now, that said, I would bet that, like, every book starts out or early on has scenes of him, like, interacting with the people of the town as a short order cook, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it probably is one of those things that works better in the books, but when they translated it to a movie, somebody, maybe Dean Koontz, insisted that it stayed, that it was an important part of the character. The problem is in the movie format, it's not important at all.
No. The only thing that happens is the Bodecks come into the into the thing. But we can just see him working as a short order cook.
Exactly. We don't need the flipping here's the thing. Sausages. Like, the one thing it does establish is that this is not a guy who lives like a high maintenance life. And I think it has value in that. We do not need the extended scene of him doing crazy ass short order cook tricks. Like, I don't need that in my life.
I don't either. But if you're going to put it in anyway, put it in at the very beginning when you're starting to talk about him. And then show him do, like, all the other cool stuff. Yes. So you could be like, oh, he can do that stuff because he's this. Instead of being like, oh, and look, he's a great cook. Like, nobody gives a fuck.
Exactly. Like, they got the order wrong a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. So anyway, so then Stormy walks in, who's this girl. They talk about in the trailer there, like, they're destined to be together.
Because they got a fortune that told them, you are destined to be together forever.
They basically got a fortune from a Zoltar from Big.
Yes.
Like, shoot the quarter in the mouth.
You are gonna be together forever.
Do you think he was like, I want to be together forever?
That said, Big, if you're gonna be together forever with someone, you could do a whole lot worse than Stormy. Like, she's super pretty, super, like, upbeat and positive, super supportive, has a sense of humor. Like, she seems like a pretty great catch.
Yeah. One thing about the actress who plays her, too, like, mm-hmm. I kept thinking she was at Hayden...
Panettiere?
Yeah, she looks like her, but it's not.
Oh, see, I didn't even...
But, like, around the lips and so I was almost like, did she dye her hair? And I was like, no, it's not her. But she kind of reminds me of her a little bit.
Hmm, interesting.
Like, way more upbeat.
I'd have to look at the two of them side by side, just because I didn't have that thought while I watched it. I was more like, do I know her? Do I know her from something?
And that's what I thought. That's what I settled on.
But the thing is, I basically have grown up with Hayden Panettiere being someone I know, because she did, like, Disney Channel shit when I was a kid.
Oh, see,
and so,
I'm not
so
familiar
I have,
with that stuff.
Yeah, so that's why I think my mind never jumped to there. Because I've seen her
in, like, two movies.
There
probably.
You go, yeah. And one of them is Remember the Titans.
Yeah, but I don't really remember the Titans. So.
So you don't remember the Titans, the Mighty Mighty Titans?
I mean, I vaguely remember the Titans. Maybe we'll get it on the show and then I could totally remember.
Here we go. Beautiful.
Anyway, so she walks in instantly. We know she's the one because, Zach.
Because he says she's the one. That is an actual line of dialogue in this movie, and it killed me.
I wish I had cut that dialogue, because if I had caught that when I was watching it, if I didn't have a 4-year-old distracting me, I totally would have cut that to play it and started using that as the she's
every
the one
time.
Drop.
Well, here's the thing. It's not too late for us to go back and get it for the she's the one drop.
That's true. You won't hear it on this show, but we'll use that in the future.
Odd Thomas is not going to have a legacy in a lot of places. It can have a legacy here.
And in hipster Dean Koontz fans.
Yes. So, this is...
So now we see the Bodek show up,
right? Yes, with Hispanic McLovin.
Well, before we see that, we see some Bodeks come into the diner, and you see like these tiles coming up, which I thought was kind of cool for bad CGI. It was all right.
To me, this isn't a matter of CGI, my problem with them. It's a matter of design. Like, just the way they moved
didn't
look right. And I don't mean that in like it looked creepy, which I know is what they were going for. What I mean by that is like the muscle, like their anatomy, it didn't look normal. Like it did not look that's how they were supposed to move.
Yeah.
Like the design didn't match the movements.
Yeah,
basically.
I agree. Like I was willing to kind of give it a pass because it was something that was like fictional that they just created. But at the same time, I was watching it like, ugh.
Yeah, because
like taking a breath every
the
time.
The bad CGI itself didn't bother me because I sort of expected if there was going to be CGI
of the
in this
milkshake,
movie.
Which is absolutely right.
Which, and even then, that didn't bother me so much because the CGI itself was bad, but because it's just so fucking unnecessary. Like, it really bugged the shit out of me.
It was. But the Bodex don't move too great, which is kind of a travesty because that's the majority of the CGI
and
in the movie.
In terms of just like if you were to look at a picture of them, it's a pretty cool design for a weird ghost monster, but the movement just didn't match their anatomy.
Yeah.
Something about it didn't add up.
So he explains that Bodex, they basically go around where they know some like a tragic murder is going to happen. And they feed off of the
despair and agony and
the negative side of
exactly.
the force.
They are from the dark side. We don't see it in the movies, but those are what Palpatine's dogs look like.
That's right. Okay, so...
Oh, so this is also in a scene. I can't remember who says it because it's been a bit since I watched the movie, but I wrote this dialogue down because it really stuck out to me. Have any of your dreams ever come true?
Yep. That's
no.
That's right what I'm getting to.
Oh,
so
awesome.
Viola shows up.
Yes,
that's,
Viola.
That's
she's played by Gugu Mbatha-Raw.
This is how you know that this could be a good CW show because like they have like a really good friend with no personality.
Yeah.
Who's like
this
black.
Infuriated
so that's like
right
with CW.
This
right
infuriated
there.
Me because Gugu Mbatha-Raw is such a good goddamn actress. She is so fucking good. The two things I know her from, I've only seen her in these two things. She did a movie. Oh God, I'm blanking on the name now. I'll get there. It's a period piece. She plays like the first black member of royalty in England. Like she gets adopted by a member of British royalty. And, oh God, it's her name and now I'm just fucking blanking on it. Oh, I'm super, Belle, there it is. It's called Belle. It's really good. I mean, it's a period romance drama, so your mileage may vary, but as those go, it's a really, like, at the top of the food chain for movies of that genre. She also was in a J.J. Abrams spy show called Undercovers, which was about a married couple who were spies. And
were they undercover?
They were undercover.
Were they also undercovers?
They were undercovers.
What an aptly named show.
And she is such a ridiculous talent that to see her play this character whose sole character trait was friends with Odd really infuriated me. It's the second biggest waste of talent in this movie.
And her second character trait is friends with Stormy.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, there's the other one.
Stormy's
oh no, and her
the
third
one, by the
what
way.
Her third character trait is has kids.
Yeah.
So that's what
kids
we're looking
that
at.
Aren't important and
at all.
Really
they're just
be
there.
In the movie, but
yep.
They're there anyway. Okay, so Viola, who's this character? She has a dream and wants to know if Odd sees death in her, which is an odd thing to ask.
Yeah, right?
Because when I was watching that, I made note of that because I was like, "What the fuck? Why is she asking him this?" Because at this point, we've established that nobody knows about its powers. Once again, that one line that they should have
exactly.
done away with.
Just get rid of it.
But from here on forward, I'm going to pretend like that line doesn't exist. So
that's basically what I had to do.
Yeah, so then it makes sense. And she dreamed that there was a dead guy with a red and black shirt with bowling balls on it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then we see Odd Thomas goes to the mall. The green something mall.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was called.
The Green Mile Mall, we'll call it.
Sure, perfect.
I got the actual name written down later somewhere.
So we'll find it. Until then, it's the Green Mile Mall.
So he's eating ice cream with Stormy. And this guy with the yellow yarmulke hair.
Yes.
Who we later name his name is...
Fungus Bob. Because his hair looks like fungus. Like, it really looks like fungus.
Yeah, and he walks by, and there's tons of Bodex following him. And it's weird because he walks by, and then... This is one of those things that makes no sense, because Stormy goes, so does he have Bodix following him? And he's like, more than I've ever seen. But I'm like, how would she know that Bodix are following this guy? Like, he's
well, the no, one no, no. See. That I got because she sees his
reaction.
Yeah, his reaction to him.
Okay.
Yeah. What
he has a Bodix reaction.
What made me laugh?
Which is like he stares at him but pretends like he's looking through him because because the Spanish McLovin, as you put it.
Yes, Hispanic McLovin.
He sees a Bodix and talks about it, and he goes, but don't you know they'll kill you if they find out you can see them? And then at that moment, the guy gets hit by a car, and then it does a fancy editing trick where it backs up and zooms into the van, and then you see like a guy driving and a Bodix like crashing through the windshield. This is another thing the continuity didn't make sense.
Yeah.
Crashes through the windshield and like affects the steering wheel so that it hits him. But later on, the Bodix can't affect anything physically, but then they can again.
Yeah.
Like, if they wanted to be consistent, it should have jumped into the driver and possessed the driver.
Yes, which, by the way, would have been pretty fucking cool.
That happens later.
My favorite bit about him watching Fungus Bob with all the Bodix around him is that some of the Bodix are just straight up riding Fungus Bob. Like, they're trying, that's their mode of transportation. Like, there's some that are just, like, hanging out on his shoulders and, like, wrapped around his hips. It's a great visual.
Okay, now, how does he wind up going to this house?
Oh, this is perfect. So, this is what it says in my note. Here's why this plot sucks. So, allow me to explain. It's a plot of convenience, and it really pisses me off. Because basically, Odd Thomas is a detective, yes?
Of sorts, yes.
But he never actually has to do any detective work. Because one of his powers, as he explains, is that once he sort of is hunting a person, he knows where they're going to go and what they're going to do. And if he goes to that place and waits for them, they show up. So basically, he's a detective who, instead of like detecting things, just goes somewhere and waits until the person shows up. Like, it's such a lame detective move. Really, like, at least give him something. Like, make him find a clue, something.
So I guess the place he waits is a house in the middle of nowhere.
Yes, because he gets a feeling that's where he needs to be. It's really annoying. So, but it works for Dean Koontz and the writers of this movie because it allows him to be wherever he needs to be at the perfect time.
So he walks in this living room and it's kind of trash and there's a toilet in the middle of the living room. Now, seems like an odd choice, right?
Mm-hmm.
I had a neighbor when I lived in Olympia.
Mm-hmm.
He was in this really tiny house and this guy who rented my house to me and my friend's house who lived next on opposite side of my house, he owned basically the entire block.
Yeah,
like he owned all the houses in the block. Okay, so there's this one little teeny tiny house, and he was told that one of the stipulations for having this house was that he kept on this guy who was renting the house, who's basically a shut-in. So we would see him every now and then, like come in and out of the car to like go, you know, get groceries, whatever, but he never left other than that and didn't really talk with anybody. Well, one day he died and like we had the opportunity to walk in the house and he had all this weird stuff in there, but like he had one room. And when I say one room, you walked in
and that was the room.
One room. It was a living room / kitchen / bathroom.
Huh.
And the toilet was in the middle. And
that's
then there
upsetting.
Was like, and then there was like, the kitchen was like 5 feet from his toilet.
Well, actually,
and we couldn't get over it. Me and my friend could not get over it.
I actually kind of like that because I like to eat and poop. I call it getting back at water.
I actually also eat when I poop, which like really makes my wife angry.
But consider it making myself just like a Subway system.
But could you imagine if you ate something rancid, you're just stinking up the whole thing, and then you're like making dinner?
Or something becomes rancid because of what you do next to your kitchen. Like, there's a lot of ways this can go wrong.
I gotta imagine it was the same sort of deal for house.
My favorite bit about this house is Venom shows up.
Yeah, Venom, a CGI Venom basically shows up. So he goes walking in, and then like it gets cold, unnaturally cold all of a sudden. And then he goes walking in and sees all these birds that get frozen.
Mm-hmm.
there's like a parrot frozen and an owl frozen and all these little parakeets frozen everywhere. And then he sees this like movie black stuff.
That, yeah. It's like tendrils of symbiote basically.
Yeah. It's totally Venom. And he sees it all open into this one hole. And so he, for some reason, like you see evil black slime. What do? I'll put my arm in there.
Yeah. Right.
There's a reason why they call me Odd.
Yep, because I make bad decisions.
So he puts his arm in there, and then it turns out to be a giant Bodok, right?
Yes.
Which goes to attack him for a second, but then like loses track of him naturally, because it's supernatural.
And this is where I wrote, his power is that nothing bad can happen to him.
Basically.
It's really frustrating.
Specifically.
Here's the thing. Like,
people around him who support him, not so much.
At any point in this movie, did you get, for even a second, did you get the sense that Odd was ever in any danger? Ever?
I will say, the fact that they kept hammering home that him and his girlfriend would be together forever, I did believe that they'd wind up dying together at the end for a while, and then it didn't happen.
Yeah. No, they're not for a second.
I mean, I never thought at any danger that he would be in trouble. Like, I just didn't think this is the kind of movie where it'd be called Odd Thomas.
Well, here's the thing:
named Odd Thomas who gets knocked off.
I didn't think he would die, but sometimes movies can successfully make me feel like they can, like the lead character can get really fucked up and hurt. You know what I mean? And at no point do I think anything bad will happen to him throughout this movie. To him specifically.
I agree. So he goes, so it turns out he gets on his cell phone because this is just a way of explaining everything he's seeing and to the audience, you know.
Yeah.
But he's talking to Storm and he's saying that he finds a gateway to hell. So apparently this giant Bodok is a gateway to hell.
Apparently.
And he realizes he's in a serial killer's
I called den. It the serial killer montage room.
Yeah, because there's pictures of serial killers everywhere, and he's got all these files for, like, Ted Bundy and the Unabomber and all this stuff.
Yeah.
He's flipping through, and then there's one for Robert Robertson, which I thought was, like, with the CGI Venom and then, like, almost Robbie Robinson. I was like,
yeah,
this dude's a Spider-Man fan, whoever made this.
Here's something that was really frustrating to me about this plot. So now we're starting to get the sense that, like, something really bad is going to happen, serial killer related, right? But throughout the movie, it sort of vacillates between this is an actual, like, apocalypse hell on earth scenario, like, demons are going to come and dark stuff.
Yeah.
And then sometimes they're just like, he's a bad man and he's going to hurt people.
He does many times sell it as the apocalypse.
And yeah.
It's not.
And then sometimes he just sells it as, like, something really bad is going to happen in this town. Like, it's all over the place.
Let's be fair. What winds up happening that
he
destroys would be a really big story for 2 weeks and then go away.
But here's the thing. Basically, it was... At a certain point, the question became to me, okay, is this going to get apocalyptic or is this just going to be a shooting? Because at any point in the movie, like certain points, they lead you to believe it's going to be either or.
When I found out it was a shooting, I was very, I felt like my legs had just been kicked out from under me. Because I'm like, you were promising.
They really
like
built some shit up. Yeah.
He says apocalypse.
Yes. And here's the thing.
Times.
Like a shooting is a really fucked up thing. Like you don't need to oversell someone is going to shoot up a mall. Like that will get people's attention. That's, you do not need to oversell
spoiler.
That.
That's what they wind up doing.
Yeah, well.
Well, yeah.
I mean, we both said shooting. The location is...
Anyway, so he goes in the Robert Robertson file and he finds a pull-off calendar, you know, where they do the dates. And it says August 15th on there. So he's got a date where this...
This is the first time he finds a clue.
And then I think he hears a noise, like somebody's pulling up, right?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and so he goes jumping out the window and like... winds up on this porch and the guy walks in and then goes to walk out of the porch. And so he leaps, like he basically grabs a roof and like climbs up onto it. And all we see is this guy yelling at a dog and he holds out this pistol.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know what the pistol's called, but I've seen a pistol that looked like it in James Bond games. And that pistol is called the Desert Eagle.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is the name of the actual gun.
No, the gun itself is called the Desert Eagle.
Oh, really?
Yep.
fuck yeah, yep. dude.
That's one of the few gun things I know. I
played that Bond game a lot. So.
Now, there's also a line of dialogue in his phone call with Stormy that stuck out to me for being really, really bad, which is this conversation. He goes, "I'm not like other people." And she goes, "Not in the least." And I go, "Ugh." Move on, we get it.
Oh, that whole phone conversation is terrible.
Grating. Just grating.
Everything he says is like just to serve as exposition for the audience.
And here's the thing. I like Anton Yelchin. Apparently, we've learned his limits as an actor because he cannot sell that exposition.
I gotta feel like it's maybe the director's fault.
Probably, you know, a little bit, yeah.
The dialogue is all wrong.
And Steven,
I don't think anybody could pull off this dialogue in this movie successfully.
Mm-mm. And Steven Sommers has not really been known for getting actors to give subtle, nuanced performances. So yeah,
there should have been a lot less dialogue in this
movie. Yeah, I mean, people should know this is a movie from the man who gave us the Mummy trilogy.
And by the way, once you establish voiceover, you don't need a phone call to have all that exposition. At all.
Then you can just do it in the voiceover. Now it seems
unnatural. You do it in the voiceover while the Bodics are... Because the Bodics like go chasing after him at one point. He's hiding in a closet before the guy shows up.
Perfect spot.
We don't need him on a phone talking to her at that point. Mm-mm. Like, we could totally handle that with voiceover.
Plus, they clearly want to take a little bit of, like, detective movie tropes to some degree. Like, if you're going to do the narration like a detective movie. Like, that works way better.
I agree. So anyway, we cut to a barbecue and we see this blonde girl hitting on him.
Mm-hmm.
Who did she go out with? Fungus Bob, was that her deal? I was confused because later
I was not totally clear.
I can't believe I went out with him. Or was it the dude that like murdered the little girl?
I'm totally unclear on
they didn't really like let the audience know what the hell she was
for all we
about.
Know she's talking about like one of Odd Thomas's past adventures from
that's what she's talking about though.
It's no I mean like
Odd Thomas did
pre-movie adventures,
right like, that's what I'm saying.
It's so weird.
It doesn't make sense.
And she's not important throughout the
Well, kind of. She shows up later.
Yeah, well, she shows up.
I mean, that's why she's in this scene is
to show up later
so that you know when you see her later, like, oh, that's that girl.
Yeah.
Not the girl, but that's
this is also where we learn that Stormy's real name is Bronwyn. So her name is Bronwyn Stormy Llewellyn. Now, I'm not saying that's a bad name. I'm just saying it's a mouthful. And they could have just had it be Stormy. Like, why not just let her name be Stormy? They clearly like that name.
And I'm saying when you have a character already named Odd, that's asking a lot of the audience to buy this.
Yes. Well, I guess my thing is like, I can see it that way. The way I took it is just like, sure, whatever. Her name's Stormy. Why not? Like, everybody's going to... Sure. I was just like, whatever. I guess
I know it's Stormy.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, I guess this is what we're doing. By the
way, her name matches her personality. So... Not this girl.
Not this one. This Stormy is very even keeled. She's like the eye of the hurricane.
Yeah. So he brings up Robert Robertson to Willem Dafoe at this barbecue.
Yeah.
Which is where we really establish, like, we hinted before that Willem Dafoe knows that he knows all this stuff. Now they out and out say that he knows Odd Thomas.
And this is also where we learn that Odd Thomas is sort of like Chris Hansen from To Catch a Predator. Like, his job is just to bring bad guys to the actual detectives. Like, that's his game.
Yeah, and all he does is just, like, he basically serves as the Commissioner Gordon Thomas's Batman. Like, he tells him to check out this guy, and he's like, okay, he's got a clean record.
Yeah.
Like, but we'll start following. We'll put a tail on him, he says. So, Odd goes to church with Stormy, and then we see, what's his name again?
Fungus Bob.
I kept writing Blonde Yarmulke before it finally sunk in. His name was Fungus Bob. So you see Blonde Yarmulke runs up to the church and he's like, oh shit. And like just goes running from the church all of a sudden. And we see stuff flying around the church. Like the guy's getting all upset. He winds up escaping from the church, and they go back to the diner.
Yeah.
Where we see Patton Oswalt.
This is great.
Really happy to see Patton Oswalt. Not just
Patton Oswalt in a beret, and he's a metal artist.
And his name is Oz.
Yes. This is an amazing cameo. I lit up when Patton Oswalt entered the scene. I was so excited.
And he made a steel heart for Odd, right?
Yes, like to protect him. Because Odd requested
it. Odd had a dream where he had to see... Once again, another thing, we didn't see the dream.
Nope, we just know what happened.
Yeah, so this thing comes out.
Which, by the way, you know when the perfect spot to show the steel heart would have been? In the scene where he imagines the bullet going through his chest. Maybe that you put the steel heart and you go, yeah. Oh, but whatever, sure.
Yeah, I know. So then Odd goes to the Green Moon Alley, and he sees the shirts from the girls' dreams.
Yeah, and so basically at this point,
bowling balls.
Basically, at this point they're trying to convince us that this bowling alley is gonna get massacred.
Yes. So then we see the cop shows a picture of the blonde yarmulke guy. Like a different cop.
Yeah, and this is what I have upon this cop's entrance is I just have the notes. What a dumb cop! And then immediately after that, he's probably the bad guy.
That was exactly what I thought, too. It's so obvious.
But here's the thing: at this point, I still thought he. At this point in the movie, I still thought he was working with Willem Dafoe, because I was convinced there's no way Willem Dafoe was just a nice guy throughout the entirety of this movie, he totally is.
I was convinced from the very beginning he was a nice guy.
I was like, well, why bother getting Willem Dafoe if you're not going to do the heel turn?
I could just tell the way Willem Dafoe was playing it. There was no other layers to this character.
That's the thing is, I thought he was like really trying to oversell the what a nice guy thing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I could see where you would think that because of Willem Dafoe's...
And part of it is...
Only because of Willem Dafoe's reputation.
And honest to God, partly just because that's what I wanted it to be. Like, I wanted them to use him properly.
Yeah, I figured out pretty fast they weren't going
to
use him
properly. But instead, we get bland Wonder Bread cop to be... whatever.
So he reaches out the picture, and he's got a POD tattoo, which as soon as I saw that, I'm like, he's a bad guy.
Yep.
Like, he might as well have done the 22 Jump Street thing where his tattoo says
red herring. Yeah.
Which I love.
I mean,
red herring was, that's a misleading thing. This is not misleading. This is,
he should have gotten a tattoo that said, I'm the bad guy.
Yeah. So then we cut over to back to Viola's house, and Odd and Stormy go over to visit her, and she breaks it down in this scene.
Your dream. What do you see? What do you hear?
All right. I'm running. There's suddenly lots of flashing lights with old-fashioned kiddie music. And then I hear a big crowd. A roaring one. Like in a big football stadium. And then there's the sound of water. Gushing water.
How do you die?
It's like someone hit me with a baseball bat quick. Like twice. I scream and fall. To my hands and knees. My hands slip. Slippery.
What are you slipping on?
Oh, God. Blood. Blood everywhere.
What's under the blood? Under your hands? Floor, grass, concrete?
I'm staring at the dead man.
Do you know him? Do you recognize him?
Oh, dear Lord, Bob. So many dead bodies. How do you have to stop this from happening? Oh, Lord, is there any hope this can pass?
If you listen to Audie, you'll be just fine.
No.
Get ready for the worst line.
Fate is not a straight road. Yeah. There are many forks in it. You have the free will to choose which one you take, but sometimes it will bend around and bring you straight back to that same stubborn fate.
I specifically had that line of dialogue written down in my notes.
Yeah, if you guys don't know, I take the clips independently as that.
Yes. So I got super excited. I was like, I could not wait to bring this.
That is the worst line. It comes out of nowhere.
And it's such pseudo intellectual, like, look how deep I am while saying nothing.
Can we hear that one more time?
Yes, please.
Nope, that's the trailer.
Your dream. What do you see?
Twice during a half.
You have the free will to choose which one you take, but
oh.
Sometimes it you take road.
Oh, Odd, is there okay, any hope this
let's
can
listen to that line one
if
more
listen
time.
Listen to Odd, you'll be just fine.
No.
All right, let's listen to that line one more time.
Fate is not a straight road. There are many forks in it. You have the free will to choose which one you take, but sometimes it will bend around and bring you straight back to that same stubborn fate.
Now, as Kevin Smith would say, that moves like an oral bowel movement.
Okay, can I walk you through a process that had to have happened? So at some point, somebody wrote that line and said, fuck yes, nailed it. Then at some point, somebody read a script with that line and said, oh my God, that's perfect. Then at some point, they rewrote the script and kept that line in there. And then at a certain point, they got an actor and they said, you have to say this line. And he said, oh my God, this is, I cannot wait. Like, people kept approving this along the way. Like, at somebody should have said no.
And then at some point, they filmed the first scene, the first part of the scene. And mm-hmm. then probably a week later filmed him saying that line so that it couldn't even naturally go with
no.
what happened. I mean, it was just like, that the whole thing with that scene is a comedy of errors.
Yes, it's clearly just so haphazardly slapdash thrown together. It's just frustrating. More than anything, it's just frustrating.
I'm just, you know, above everything else, I'm just disappointed.
Now, again, it sounds like we're trashing on this movie a lot. What you have to understand is when you watch it is real, like it is charming when you watch it.
I kind of enjoyed it.
Yeah, like it yeah. it has a sense of playfulness to it that's very appealing. It's just when you sit down and sort of break it down, the cracks that you can see when you watch it start to really show.
Yeah, it's not a good movie. But it's not necessarily an unentertaining
Yeah, like
movie
if
either.
You were on the fence about this one, I'd say check it out, see how you feel.
Yeah. Anyway, so now we see that they go over to see Viola's girls, who I guess are in jeopardy too somehow. They don't really explain it.
Well, I mean, I would say they're in jeopardy if their mom dies, but that's about it. But apparently they are also in grave jeopardy of some kind.
Right, like the apocalypse.
Yeah, like, isn't it enough that these girls might...
Are we all in danger in the apocalypse?
Yes, right?
Especially a mall apocalypse.
The mall-pocalypse.
Mall-pocalypse. So we see that the Bodics are hanging out with Viola's girls. So they really tip off that the girls are in trouble mm-hmm. after the characters say it painfully.
Yes. So just in case, you know, that's just in case anyone missed those lines. You could then see, oh, that's a problem.
So then Stormy and Odd leave. They're on a motorcycle and they start talking about, she goes like, won't the Bodics eventually figure out you can see them when you solve all these cases? And he's like, just gives a look like, I can't talk about it.
Yeah, he's like, oh, it's a secret.
That's for a future movie.
Yep. We'll deal with this during sequels.
But during this time, they pass some signs. So here's your no prize for the week, Zach.
Uh-huh.
So they show all these signs, but everything is backwards in the signs. Why?
Well... Okay, so here's the thing. Bodaks, there's a lot of them streaming into the world at this point, right?
Okay.
They can't all be chasing disaster. Like, all the Bodaks know that the bad thing is coming, right? So, there has to be like one or two renegade Bodaks who are like, well, you know, these guys got it. Like, if I was a Bodak, me and one of my Bodak buddies would have this conversation. I mean, it seems like these guys got the danger and the murder and stuff handled. I don't know, you just want to fuck with these people for a while? And they would go and fuck about with signs. And, like, if there were, they'd go into restaurants and find the arrow pointing to the bathroom and turn it the other direction. Like, shit like that, just to fuck with people.
I would say that they can't affect the physical world,
but sometimes,
since they sometimes can.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's how I knew I could get away with that one.
It makes as much sense as everything else yeah. in this movie. Anyway.
And I just like to imagine what I would be like as a Bodak, and you gave me that opportunity.
So now we see a scene where we see the blonde girl from the barbecue. She's running. She's got a black eye and all these dogs are chasing her. And mm-hmm. she's like scared out of her wits.
Mm-hmm.
And Odd saves her, right? No, Odd steps up and is going to save her. And then we see this bald guy flash out a yep. Desert Eagle pistol, which yep. like, I know they were trying to be subtle with it, but the second I saw that gun, I was like, that's the gun that was threatening the yep. dogs, that he would get even with them someday.
Here's
and
the
then
thing.
He shoots all the dogs.
If they were going to be subtle.
And it's the same dogs.
If they were going to be subtle, they would have, I mean.
Don't show the pistol.
Well, either that or just get like a Glock, like something that just looks like a black pistol that doesn't really differentiate itself from a distance any more than any other
yeah,
pistol.
I would agree with that. But no, it's that Desert Eagle.
Mm-hmm.
That
and a Desert Eagle, like,
square,
if you,
silver.
If you've seen a Desert Eagle, you will recognize a Desert Eagle in any situation.
It's basically, it looks like the barrel is a rectangle.
Yeah.
Okay, and then, like, it's like another rectangle with, like,
it's
a
very,
rectangle hand.
It's
handle,
a very boxy
it's silver.
Gun.
Like, it's yep. really silvery. Yeah. It's there's no mistake in that gun.
Yeah.
Like, once you see it earlier. Anyway, so the guy is apparently a teacher. The cops explain through more exposition. And then we see that the blonde... Okay, so then Odd goes home, and he sees that blonde yarmulke guy is shot and killed in his tub.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a setup.
So he steals his neighbor Rosalia's car and then references that he does this all the time. So much so to the point that he's already got the wires out ready for it to be hot wired. Yeah.
But also we establish pretty fast that he realizes when he sees the dead guy in the tub.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that happened
a while ago.
This guy's been a ghost when he's been,
which is why
him.
He never talks.
Yeah. So once again, that, you know, the rule works when they follow it.
Yes. funny how that goes, huh?
Yeah. So he throws the body in the trunk of his neighbor, as you were saying. He gets rid of him in a gas chamber.
Yeah.
It's weird because they go to this abandoned, he goes to this abandoned spot and
mm-hmm.
it's like an adult bookstore. It used to
yeah.
be, has a banner for it, and you walk in and it almost looks like an abandoned amusement park, and he walks in one part and says something about
like a gas tank
people.
Yeah, it's,
yeah,
and I'm not totally
he puts
clear
it in
what
it looks like. They would like lethally like kill people in a gas chamber or
yeah
something.
I totally did not know what that was or why Odd Thomas knew about it, like.
And so he throws the guy in there. And it has a door, and he just leaves the door wide open.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Which
that bothered me, too.
Doesn't come into play later, but no. I'm like, if you have a dead body, you should be, like, you know, going the extra mile to make sure that somebody
no
doesn't
shit,
find
right?
it. If it's got set up for you all the
time. Uh-huh.
Anyway.
Whatever.
Yeah. So then we cut to Willem Dafoe, like, answers the door late at night,
mm-hmm.
and he gets shot 3 times in the chest.
Yep.
And I guess the wife's okay, because they just cut away. But then we find out super fast that, like, he was wearing the steel heart that Odd Thomas gave him,
yep.
And 2 of the bullets hit the heart, but the 3rd one didn't, so they didn't know if he would survive or not.
Yep.
So, you know, I guess there's some sort of stakes still. And then Stormy talks with Odds.
This has one of my other favorite terrible bits of dialogue. Now, this is a paraphrasing.
Is it, don't look back, give him strength?
No, this one...
That was bad, too.
Yes, it was.
She says something about how he's got a nut up or whatever.
Yeah. At one point, he says something like, you have issues or something like that. And Stormy goes, issues make girls interesting and men interested. And I was like... throughout this movie,
all of their dialogue with each other is terrible.
And here's the thing.
Every last bit of it.
That's a blatant lie. She is living like a charmed life. She has no issues.
She works in an ice cream parlor. She's
yeah.
got an interesting boyfriend.
She clearly is like a very happy, well-adjusted person.
Who knows that her boyfriend sees Bodix and is okay
yeah.
with it. Like, what's depressing about
Let's
this?
Go. Not even is okay with it. Believes him.
Okay, so for some reason, Odd goes back to the serial killer's house.
Yeah. And he basically has a fight scene with a poltergeist.
But before that, he goes in the fridge and there's like cockroaches and then he finds a container filled with teeth. And then he was like talking with his girlfriend on the phone earlier and she's talking about how you need to find like a skull or need to look in the freezer because that's where the skulls are.
Mm-hmm.
And so he like opens an ice cream tub and there's like a skull inside an ice cream bucket. And then like, yeah, blonde yarmulke guy.
Yeah,
like,
Fungus Bob shows up.
Goes out, makes a giant mess of the place, and then, of course, there's an exposed gas leak at some point,
yep.
somehow, and then, like, then the ghost just causes it to explode, because even though he can't, I don't know, somehow he just, like, snaps his finger or something and everything explodes.
Yeah.
They don't really explain that, so apparently he has flame powers now, too. Which is never mentioned again.
No, no. Hey, remember, his power is to do things that allow him to... he is never allowed to be hurt.
As long as he doesn't talk, he's fine.
Yes.
So, so then Odd starts thinking about the bullet through the heart and somehow puts it together that the yarmulke guy... he thinks about the bullet through the heart of the yarmulke guy, right? And so
yeah.
he goes to see the body... And he, like, for some reason, puts the parts where the bullet was peeled away the skin, like, back together.
And cockroaches start coming out.
A POD tattoo.
Yeah.
Imagine that. So, he realizes pretty fast they don't let you think about it at all. They're just like, that means Prince of Darkness.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, I thought it was, like, a metal band. All right. You win. You win, Odd Tom.
You win this one.
So then somehow he figures out he's got to rush to the Green Moon Mall. I did not catch why. I'm not sure if they even said why. But somehow he figures out it's at the Green Moon Mall that he
yeah.
has to go. Not the Green Moon Bowling Alley.
No. Green Moon Mall.
Right. So he goes there and he goes to the security office and immediately there's a masked man
mm-hmm.
that he like beats the shit out of and like mm-hmm. puts him out. And it's the cop with the POD tattoo. And so he says they were planning to jump out as heroes. Like, Odd Thomas
yeah.
figures this out through dialogue.
Yep.
Not through anything
nope.
he sees. He
just Again, lets us this know. Is yet another instance of Odd Thomas doesn't figure anything out so much as it just comes to
he
him.
He just explains it to
yeah,
us.
Yeah, it comes to him when he needs to know it.
So then he goes down to the food court and he sees the bowling team and Viola at the mall.
And this is when I go, okay, so it's not the apocalypse. They're just going to get murdered.
Yeah, and I was just like, this might be in bad taste considering mm-hmm. all the shootings. Like, at least sell it as like a shooting instead.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It just felt grody.
It did. So the shooting begins and he runs after the shooter and then, like, all the Bodix come and suddenly start to try and stop Odd Thomas. There's, like, 100 of them pulling him back.
And this is when he has a moment where he realizes, oh, they knew I could see them all along. They were just... They knew
they
I could...
They were misleading him.
Exactly. They were planning this.
Even though they
this.
Led him to all these things.
Yeah.
They're terrible, dude. They're basically
they're
like
awful.
The Bond villain who describes
exactly.
his entire mad plot.
Yep.
To Bond before Bond escapes.
Yep.
They kind
Pretty
of
much,
do that.
Yeah.
They sow the seeds for him to solve the crime. It's
silly.
It
is what it
make
is.
Sense. But they're all pulling him back, and of course he somehow finds the strength to get to the shooter right in time. He's only got
yep.
4 bullets. He misses with 3, and then the 4th one he blasts the dude in the chest and kills him.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one guy left because somehow they established there's 3 guys. Once again, we don't know how. He just, like, explains in voiceover that
yeah.
there's 3 guys.
Yes.
I mean, he finds nothing that explains it.
Nothing at any point. He just knows. He's not a good detective. Things just work out for him.
Yeah. So then he runs up, like, he sees is it a dead girl? Like, a girl who died in the mall? Is that what happens?
I think. Oh, also, before he runs off, he has a never
Stormy
mind.
Almost gets hit
yeah.
by the...
And Stormy
too.
Pop, and he's like all worried because he's just looking, and she's not behind the counter at the ice
and
cream shop.
I was watching that. I was like, "Are they gonna kill her?"
And then she rises up from above, and they're
yeah,
so
and
happy,
like,
and they
that
have
would
a moment.
Be such an odd, like, I
yeah, what a weird.
I literally thought that would be such an odd twist of like
uh-huh.
of the tone of the movie.
Yeah,
but
like
then she pops
he can protect
up, like,
everybody
okay.
but her.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, They're not going Lethal Weapon on this. Yep. It's not Riggs. So, or Lethal Weapon 2.
Yes. Anyway,
they went Lethal Weapon 3 in that moment.
Yes. There you go. Beautiful.
But hold that thought.
We will be revisiting the Lethal Weapon 3 moment.
So I think there's a dead girl in the mall who did get killed. And so he goes to follow her and she goes into a truck.
And then
he's like, there's a girl in the truck. Like, you need to open this guy. And so they wind up cutting off the lock. And there's and all this like C4 in
there. There's a bomb.
Yep. Like a whole bunch of blanky light bomb looking stuff.
Yes.
It's clearly not really
and
a bomb.
So,
props to make it look like a bomb.
So,
I just have to say, because it was so phony looking. I know. It's like they took apart some old school calculators and like attached it to some oxygen tanks.
And then
had random wires come out everywhere.
It may as well have been like, you know, in the cartoons where a bomb is basically like a cannonball with a fuse coming out.
Yeah.
It may as well have been that. For all intents and purposes.
So right at that moment, there's a cop that goes walking by, and this Bodick, like, suddenly, this big Bodick, the one that
big
he
Papa
put his
Bodick.
Arm through, yeah.
Yep.
Like, goes into the cop, and then the cop takes shots at him.
He
jumps into this van.
He gets, this is
has
my
the
favorite.
C4.
He gets winged by the cop, and there's blood on the door of the van. And then the van's clean as soon as he starts driving it.
Yeah. So then,
and also his wound's fine.
And then somehow the cop got a hold of the van. They don't really explain that either. But he's like, you suddenly see him. He's like dragging on the side of it.
Yeah.
He gets up to the thing and he just lets go and shoots. That's another thing. We could no prize so much.
I know.
If we really want to. He like lets go of the van and then like fires and hits Thomas. Was that when he hit him in the shoulder?
No, he gets winged as he's running into the
car. Okay,
van.
He hits him again. Oh, I know. It grazes his
forehead. Skull.
Yeah, yeah. So we see like this mark kind of show up.
Mm-hmm.
Not really in the place of where we see the CGI bullet
go,
though.
But
they
near
totally
it.
Totally fucked it up. So then Odd Thomas leaps out of the van.
He's basically doing the scene in Dark Knight Rises where Batman flies the bomb away. Like, this is what he's doing. He's driving the bomb away.
So the cop gets into the van right as he goes leaping out of it. And of course, like, the cop, instead of grabbing the steering wheel, gives like a Wile E. Coyote look.
Yep.
And then, like, it falls in a drainage ditch. And I did enjoy this. Like, the way too big explosion, which then like goes in a funnel down the drainage ditch for like, I don't know, a mile.
You forgot
just shoots
my
down
favorite
it.
Part of the explosion. In the explosion, the big Bodak is just in the center of it flying out at you in terrible CG.
Yeah.
It's a good time all around. I had a great time with that scene.
I did enjoy that. So he wakes up in a hospital.
And he's basically an adored superhero.
Yep.
Like, everyone loves him.
Everybody keeps talking about it, but he's staying away from the news. He doesn't care. And he explains, and once again, an exposition that the cops were in a cult. Or these people were in a cult, and then they decided that they were going to join the cops after they killed somebody and they liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they wanted to, like, destroy a town.
Yeah. Which, sure. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
They said systematically destroy a town, but that's...
I mean, let's be honest, that's the most plausible part of this plot, so...
So then I wrote down Defoe lives.
Yep.
And seems too friendly.
Super friendly.
I mean, I assumed he was super friendly throughout the thing, but then when it finally completed that he's not a bad guy, I was like, man.
Willem Dafoe. So you weren't like me thinking there was a chance it still happened, but you were hoping for it.
Yeah.
He has never been more miscast in his career.
Yeah, I
ever.
Agree. He's pretty bad in Flight of the Intruder too.
Yeah, but
if you go back and listen to that box office battle we talked about a little bit, like, it's fucked up that he's not a bad guy, although he does escalate the Vietnam War. So at least he's got that.
And at least that was at a different stage in his career. Like, in 2013, like, we know what Willem Dafoe does.
Antichrist. Green Goblin.
Chaos reigns. Antichrist is a... Oh, God. I hope we get that movie one day.
Okay, so then like Odd Thomas talks about how like he does all the things that he should have done with this girl.
Yeah, like, there's basically like a montage of them like cuddling and laughing and her feeding him ice cream. And
Willem Dafoe goes to visit him and it's all friendly. And then suddenly like the tone just shifts.
Yeah, and Willem Dafoe goes,
it's time.
No, he goes, they're getting ready to take her body. It's time to let go. And Odd Thomas turns around. And Stormy's outfit has totally changed, and she's just riddled with bullet holes. Yeah, it's so like, Jesus Christ.
So they did change it. So it is Lethal Weapon 1.
Yeah, so she's been dead this entire time. So first of all, she's the first dead person we can meet who can still talk and do physical stuff.
But then she can't talk anymore.
No, then the talking goes away.
What the fuck, dude? Yeah, they once again break the rule.
And here's what bothers me more than anything about this scene. It's totally emotionally unearned. Like, at no point are we given any reason to be bummed out about her dying other than she's a generally nice person and Odd Thomas loves her. Like, it's one of those things where, like, it's sad in the way that anybody getting just violently shot up is sad, but there's no depth to it because she's never presented as an actual character. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's like watching a cartoon die to some degree. Like you don't get any of the emotions you would feel if you felt like she was a real fully developed person.
Yeah. Now I will say they've talked earlier about how she wanted to go to Vegas and he said, well, if we like run away to Vegas.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, if I went to Vegas, there's more dead people there than
mm-hmm.
anywhere. Like I'd be busy the whole time. So he winds up walking through the desert to Vegas, like in honor of her, I guess.
Yeah. And it's basically his final monologue is, my love is dead. Let's go to work. I mean,
No, you're right.
I've really distilled it down. That's essentially what he says. Like, love is dead. Let's get to work.
Now, here's the thing about the ending. The tone doesn't work.
At all.
The dialogue doesn't work, especially mm-mm. in that she has dialogue.
Yes.
Which they could have, once again, easily snipped out and made it work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they needed an editor to pass over this movie.
Yeah, they did.
Badly. But that didn't work. None of this, like you said, it's a cheap emotional climax. None of this really works, but I still kind of like the end just because you never see that in a happy movie
ever,
that like ends with
ever.
The girl dying like that.
And it's
like,
here's the thing is after that scene when he does go to work, it's not presented to be super happy.
Like if it was a drama, you could see it.
Yes.
But, like this,
but in a movie like this, like you'd never expect
it's
it.
It's basically a comedy, right?
Yeah, it's yeah, I'd say
so. By the way, bad
I think
job,
it's a comedy in the
Netflix,
same way.
Netflix, bad job
putting this
in
horror thriller. Yeah.
Like the number, what?
Its tone
more?
Is probably closer to Iron Man's tone.
Yeah.
Like
I mean,
it's
not nearly
it's
as good
not,
as Iron Man.
It's but. No, not at all. But it's not a straight up comedy, but it's a very comedic fantasy movie.
Now, all that being said, there are mistakes. I would say it's akin to Batman Begins or The Dark Knight Returns in that there are so many plot holes like all over the place, but yet I still enjoyed it.
Yeah. It's a very, everyone is
likable. If this was on TV and I was bored, I could see like watching a little bit.
Yeah, definitely.
Like it's not bad. It's just badly executed.
Yes. It's an interesting idea done in a charming, playful way with likable people. And it just, the parts don't come together.
So it's a Pyrrhic victory for the movie. Take it however you want.
And you know. The thing I do like is after that dark, dark tonal shift at the end, the very end where he gets to Vegas isn't presented as happy by any stretch of the imagination, but it is presented as optimistic, which makes the ending feel even more out of place. Like, make him be angry. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, give me something other than...
Give us the end of Night Watch.
There you go.
That really wouldn't work.
No, at all.
Take it to another level.
Well, I guess if you're going to do it, commit, right? Yeah. So, in a nutshell, if you're sort of curious about this movie, if you've been on the line, I'd say give it a watch. I could see myself recommending this because I don't regret watching it. I had a good time watching it. It's just you're going to notice some problems when you watch it.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know when you're watching a not stellar movie, but you can still enjoy it. That's in that camp, you know? Anyway, So let's cut to our next movie that we'll be reviewing. Now, before that, we're going to do a little bit different for the next episode. We're going to occasionally break up the formula because it's fun.
Think of these break up the formula episodes as like our annuals. Like in a comic series, you have the regular numbered issues and then annuals. Just like fun things we do for ourselves.
Let's say triannuals.
There we go.
This about three times a year.
We can call them giant size.
Yeah, there we go. Our giant size episode.
Because here's the dirty...
Shorter.
For those of you who aren't comic readers, here's the dirty little secret about giant sized issues. What giant sized issues actually are is one story that's the exact same length of every other issue and then filler. Like, that's how giant sized issues work.
Yeah. We're going to go over our top five favorite of the movies we've reviewed on Real Roulette. We're also going to go with our all-time top five favorite movies.
Yes. So you're going to get four top fives. Now, that's value.
Yeah, that is. there will be some crossover from the first episode.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
I'll give you a little bit of spoiler. Godfather 2 going to be on number one.
Going to make some lists.
So you already know number one on Biggs' list.
But that's okay. It's about the journey, not the destination.
That's not the only movie we didn't pick at random.
Now, here's what we should do. When we actually do the list, we got to go from 5 to 1 to build some suspense.
There you go. The suspense is on number 2.
But then you could really fuck with
people.
We'll
quit Tarantino it. We'll show number 1 first.
There you go.
We'll do our own order, dude.
Yeah. We'll do however we damn... This is our podcast.
Okay, so what would you give this movie... on a Rotten Tomatoes scale, I would say I think the critics gave it a 52.
I'm gonna guess around. I'm gonna go with 39.
Okay, the actual number is 33. So you were 6 off.
Nice.
I was 19 off. I have no way to gauge these anymore. I've lost my mind. Anyway, so it's looking like 25. So we were on horror.
Yeah.
Enough.
Which is, this is, again, Odd Thomas is only really a horror movie in so much as people die. So I hope we get a comedy that's about vampires who don't do anything funny.
Well, we got romance.
I'm in. Let's do this.
Okay, so the budget for this movie, it made $64.4 million overseas, was never released in the United States.
Theatrically, yeah.
Right. But its budget was 27 mil, so it made some money.
Yeah, it did okay for itself. Yes. Not enough to justify a sequel.
I wouldn't think
so. But enough to justify its continued existence.
Yeah. So 27's our number. So we've got romantic dramas.
This could really go either way.
this I might watch. Maybe I could get my wife to sit in on it.
There you go. Time.
Maybe. She was almost talking about doing it today, but she had schoolwork.
I am unmarried, so I might just make myself a nice candlelit dinner. That's what I'll do.
Okay, so what's the number we're gonna do? The significant number.
Well, I don't know. Do you have an idea?
I had a suggestion, which was there's one big Bodix, so maybe one.
Okay, we could go with 3 for the number of times Willem Dafoe was shot.
Okay. Oh yeah, that's a significant one. What do you want to go with?
I'll go with 3 just because that makes you have to do a little bit more counting.
Okay, so what we skipped was What If.
Huh.
Which, unfortunately, isn't the Marvel Comics What If.
Yeah, that'd be pretty sweet, though, right?
That'd be interesting. Instead, we got Soda Springs. After returning to his unforgiven hometown to rebuild his life,
oh, no.
An ex-con tries to find redemption through his passion for music.
Oh, no.
And a new love.
Oh, no.
Starring Jay Pickett.
Sure.
Victoria Pratt. And motherfucking Tom Skerritt. I hope there's
All
an
right.
alien. I hope
Tom
there's an alien.
Tom Skerritt. So basically, there's a lot of things that I'm not so psyched about and Tom Skerritt.
Created by Michael Fife.
All right.
That is.
I am hoping that this is one of those movies that I know nothing about that exceeds expectations. And here's the thing, it's not a high bar. My expectations based off what you just told me are not high.
No, mine either. But I'm looking for, I do like Tom Skerritt.
Me too.
I was introduced to him through an episode of Cheers and then many episodes of Cheers
because uh-huh.
he was Rebecca's boss that she had a crush on when we first were introduced to Rebecca.
Yeah.
And then later in life I would realize, oh, I was already introduced to Tom Skerritt
through a movie you might have heard of. A
movie called Alien. And then he's on a show called Picket Fences as well.
Yes.
Which was like a weird, like it was like a run-of-the-mill like drama, like, oh, this person is in love with this person, although this person's also in love with this person, and that kind of dumb stuff. And then every now and then, there's a head in a refrigerator, which actually did happen in that show, just to tie it in with what we just saw.
Because, listen, if there's going to be heads anywhere, it's going to be in your freezer or your fridge.
It's true. It's absolutely true. At least in the universe of Picket Fences and Odd Thomas, which I like to think of, they're like the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
They're tied together.
They are through the Real Roulette universe.
Anyway. Yes, there we go.
We have Michael Corleone.
Mm-hmm.
Charlton Heston's character.
Mm-hmm. And Odd George Thomas. Taylor and Odd Thomas.
George Taylor.
George, did I say George?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Just, well, Taylor, right?
Just Taylor, yeah. Where did I get the George from?
I don't know.
Where did that come from?
And Tom Skerritt. They're all running around in the same universe.
Oh, that's what great. A magical place.
That's right. Where mega sharks attack mecha sharks in the ocean.
And Van Pelt is just running around with his big-ass gun. It's a good time. Well, once you've dealt with your heads and you've got them in your fridge and freezer, go to the pantry, grab some popcorn, and we'll see you on Netflix.